Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Got it caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He's got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week. Tuesday evening, what is it, the 9th? February 9th?
Something like that.
And here we go.
It is the 9th. By the way, 5 days away from Valentine's Day. So for all you Jaguar fans that are hoping to talk the wife into some tickets, you know, take care of the wife and girlfriends and all that other stuff.
Great segue into Friday night, speaking of that.
Yeah, that's right.
The pride. Wayne Weaver, Jack Del Rio, Tony Boselli, Carl Cannon will be here at the stadium Friday at 6 down in the south end zone for the Team Teal Touchdown Jacksonville kickoff rally. They have a lot of prizes.
Are you going to do it in the Bud Zone?
I think so.
Cool.
Yeah, I think down in the south end zone there. But the thing is, they're giving away season tickets. They're going to upgrade some folks to Touchdown Club tickets. And, of course, they'll have special concessions, yeah, in the Bud Zone. So Friday night's your chance to get out there and do that, folks. 6 o'clock. A lot of folks will be here. It was sensational last year. When you look back on what they did and the way that they did it and they engaged people, it you couldn't have asked for anything more.
No, and you got to keep it going. You got to keep it going and let people know that this is an NFL city and you know, this football team is very important to the city.
It's up
important to us.
Oh, yeah, really. And it's up
to the three amigos now.
It's up to us. Joe, get on the mic real quick. Please. Okay.
Hello, boys.
So
hello, Joe.
It's up to us to take the show to the next level now, too.
Yeah, we're a little different this week.
It's evolved from 1998 till now, and people who've listened all that time understand that. And you know, we're working on some things. You know, we'll have a person in here at some point in time, and we're not going to announce anything.
Or persons.
Maybe a couple different people. They'll make sense. It will be comfortable. You will understand who is in here and why they're in here when we get to that point. But for now, we're just going to let the show evolve. And we were talking in Joe's office, 20 minutes ago?
Yep.
We decided we're going to jump into it. And we're going to use the social media as a method for people to get in. You've used it on the Monday Night Show, right?
And it works.
And we're going to let Brian be the director. And then he'll write very, very simple directions that I can follow if you're not here.
You know, it's funny. I can remember when I started texting, and you're like, I don't do all that texting stuff. Well, you're texting
I'm a texting machine now, but I mean, the Twitter and the Facebook, you know, I haven't figured it out because I haven't done it ever. But I
bet you Dylan could figure it out for you.
That's for sure. But we'll access it during the show, and we're going to encourage fans to ask questions. We will do things on that will be, you know, polls, et cetera, and we'll let you know the results at the end of the show. We'll have fun with it.
People follow the @JagsVoice, so I won't change that. It'll still be that. But I was thinking about changing it to @JagsRadio, but we'll just leave it @JagsVoice right now because Jeff is a voice and Joe is a voice that you know, so we'll leave that. The Facebook page for the Jaguars is what? It's Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars.
Simple enough.
And when you post something up there, man, we'll run with it. And we'll have some fun and we'll let this evolve. Now, piece of news today relative to Jaguars media, and that is an old friend is coming back to take over as the senior editor of Jaguars.com. And we'll talk with John Osher in our second segment this evening. He's a guy that you knew from your playing days.
Very well.
And I knew from the media. And he is a gifted writer.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on John a little bit prior to us having him on because, you know, John and Pete Prisco covered the Jaguars for the Times Union back when I was a player in 1995. And I can honestly say that I deeply respected both Pete and John. I had a lot of respect for them, had a great relationship with them. They knew things to write, things not to write. But I can honestly say this about John, and that we've come to know John even more over the last, 5 or 6 years even more, because when we call a game, we rely heavily on public relations departments to give us information.
Clips.
And unfortunately, not all public relations departments are created equal. There are some that are dramatically better than others. One of the worst in the National Football League is the Indianapolis Colts. They give you a book of numbers that seems to never end for Peyton Manning, which I understand that, but you got to be able to simplify things. They never did that. So I don't know about you, Brian, but for me, leading up to the week of the Colts, whether it was home or away, to get my information on what the heartbeat was for the Indianapolis Colts, I would read John Osher, whether it been at Colts.com,
right,
which he wrote for them for a couple of years, or whether it been the next website that the John followed up to, and I can't remember exactly, IndyFootballReport.com or whatever it was.
Examiner.com, a couple of different sites.
Yeah, and so I got great respect, and I can honestly tell you folks that when you read John, you will not have any piece of information pass you by. He covers everything from beginning to end, and he is a very talented writer. Now, he may not be the sarcastic, grumpy, old...
angry.
son of a bitch that Vic was. You know, I think I guess you can say that on radio, right?
I didn't hear anything.
I did.
He's not Vic, but he's John.
But he's John, and he does a great job, and I look forward to reading his stuff.
Yeah, I was excited. You know, when we heard that Vic was leaving, and we started to think about who it might be, the first name that popped
John
into
Osher.
Is John, right? He's from
John.
Here, grew up here. He and Sherry have a son who have, you know, obviously ties here, and they're coming back. And it's good for the Jaguars, and it will be very good for all of us. So we'll check in with John after our first break this evening, get his thoughts on coming back. I'm guessing right about now, he's excited to come back down here because they've just been buried with snow in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and at the same time, you know, we are, you know, glad that the Vic farewell tour is over. In fact, today kind of concluded it, and there was a somewhat of a, for folks that know, we had a great time with the Vic farewell tour, which seemed to never end, and we joked about that. We had like a little video roast.
Yeah.
That Vic got
have
to watch today. I did. I actually watched it a little while ago, and it was like 20 minutes long, and everybody from Wayne Weaver on down had some fun making, or I should say, taking some shots at Vic on his way out the door. All in good fun.
Sure. And it is time for that to be over with now. So
it is.
We move on, and let's grab a quick call, and then we'll take a break, check in with John Osher, talk about the Super Bowl. There's lots to talk about with labor, and I'm sure that's something we'll do over the next couple of weeks. But let's grab Kevin in Mandarin with our first call of the evening. Hello, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you tonight?
Great.
Just kind of had a quick question. I saw that there was a transaction made this week by the Jags. They released Jordan Black and, I guess, signed Brad Beerling, that center that was on the practice squad.
That's right.
Do I have that right?
Yes.
Just kind of curious to get your thoughts on, you know, with the labor negotiation problem looming, why they would, you know, what the thinking is on the part of the Jags, Gene Smith, behind that move, why you would let a guy like that go, why not just keep him? Is there something about the practice squad players that would cause him to want to go ahead and maybe lock one of those guys up if they really liked him, or I'm just trying to get a gauge on that?
Well, I don't think that either one of those transactions was labor-related. I think that if you look at Veerling, is that, hey, you know, you look at them individually to me, you know, you got a center, Brad Meester, who is not getting any younger, and you need to eventually find a replacement for him, however soon that comes. Now, as far as Jordan Black goes, to me it was performance-related. Throughout the time that Jordan had to play right tackle, through the rest of the year, they had to protect him.
The sentiment from you was, uh-oh.
Yeah, they had to protect him.
Yeah.
And you've got a young, up-and-coming right tackle in Evan Britton. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think the Jaguars think they can do better.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they feel that they can upgrade that position or that roster spot with somebody else. And the one who I like a bunch was the kid from Marshall.
Baldridge.
Daniel Baldridge. And Kevin, remember that name because when they were in training camp last year, Daniel Baldridge was actually coached prior to the draft by one of my ex-teammates, Jim Sweeney, that I played with when I was with the New York Jets, and he was an offensive lineman, a center, Pittsburgh native, finished his career up with the Steelers.
He had a 16-year career.
He was a phenomenal player. Phenomenal player. And I remember after the Jaguars signed him to a rookie free agent contract, Jim Sweeney called me and he said, "Hey, Logs, man, I want you to know about this guy that they signed." And so I watched him more because Jim called me. And he reminded me a lot of Jim Runyon. Because John Runyon. Because John was never a guy that had great feet, but he was feisty. Yeah. He would fight you play after play. That's what Daniel Baldridge reminds me of. And to me, if you had to have a choice between Baldridge or Jordan Black, I'm taking Baldridge.
Young, big, feisty.
Young, big, feisty, and to be honest with you, I think the guy's got starting potential.
Away we go, folks.
Eventually.
And so the Jaguars made the move. I don't remember Vierling. I just want to touch on this real quick. There was a young center in training camp last year who got hurt at the very end of the year from
Hawaii. Ended up on IR, and I love him.
John Estes.
Yeah.
You more than loved him.
Tough.
You were comparing him to
Boston.
A great, yeah, a
reminds
great
me of Boston.
Center.
Reminds me of Bostic because, you know, when you look at him, you know, we're talking about today's standards. I mean, Bostic, when he played the game, he was about Mark Stepnoski size, the center for the Cowboys, Oilers, Titans. I don't know if he was around for the Titans, but I think that was – anyway. Smaller center, although he's 300-and-something pounds,
right.
Feisty, good technique, and I like him a lot. So
the Jaguars have three centers.
Baldridge,
now.
And then, you know, obviously this kid from Hawaii.
Yeah, John Estes.
I think, you know, they've got some quality depth.
And that's what you're looking for. Let's take our first break. We'll come back to check in with John Osher from Indianapolis, soon to be here in Jacksonville as the new senior editor of Jaguars.com. This break, then more. Jaguars this week brought to you by the Bueller Swiss Watch Company. You can get yours at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville right after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back, Jaguars, this week. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, and the new senior editor of Jaguars.com, John Osher. Senior doesn't sound right because you're just not that old, John. Welcome. We're excited, excited to have you, Johnny.
It's been 10 years since we worked together, Brian, so I'd make the argument that I probably am that old now.
Yeah, so am I.
Oh, come on, John. You're not that old. You still look like you're in your 30s.
Unfortunately, Jeff, we're about the same age. You're in the same boat as I am.
Like I said, you're in your 30s.
That's right, 30.
Hey,
39 is always nice.
Hey, give people an idea of kind of where you're from, first of all, and then obviously you worked at the Times Union. What was that, for 6 years, John?
Yeah, I covered the Jags you know, obviously the first 3 years when you were there, Jeff, and then through 2000. I left in the summer of 2001, you know, to cover the Colts. I've been doing that since. As far as where I'm from, I was born in Indiana, but we only spent about 3 or 4 years there. And you know, I consider myself from Jacksonville. I went to St. Andrew's Episcopal Day School and Episcopal High School and, you know, graduated from Florida. So, you know, when I'm making this move, I'm considering myself coming home. That's a big part. Probably as big a part as, you know, the chance to work with a lot of good people, as you guys know. But the chance to come home and, you know, sort of continue raising my son where I was born is very appealing.
Well,
not born, but where I'm from.
Well,
very appealing.
One of the questions that I have, you know, when and not to bring this up because I you know, obviously Vic is gone. But, you know, when Vic comes, yeah, exactly.
You're going to fit in just fine.
And, John, folks, John knows Vic from way back when. And when Vic came here, he obviously had a lot of historical references to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now that you've spent some time in Indianapolis and have covered the Colts, are we going to get that same BS, you know, you talking about, you know, Peyton Manning and the Colts and referencing the Jaguars?
Well, I mean, I would be naive to think that covering the Colts and covering Peyton, who's, you know, obviously one of the elite players in the league, you know, certainly they do some things right that, you know, when you've covered a team that's made 9 playoff appearances, you're certainly going to reference some of the things they do organizationally, draft-wise, because that's what you've spent, in, you know, the last decade sort of studying and following. But, you know, am I going to be Vic where everything the black and gold does is the right way? I wouldn't say everything that the blue and white does is going to be automatically the right way. But as I saw Vic had written something recently where you're always influenced by what you've covered. And I think certainly that's true. I'm still influenced by, you know, by a lot of things you guys did, Jeff, when you first got there, by a lot of things that Tom did when he was there. You know, I think you're always influenced by what you've covered, especially if those teams have been successful, which I've been fortunate enough to cover 2 very successful, you know, organizations. I went from Tom Coughlin to Tony Dungy, which is a big personality shift. But, you know, they did things a lot of the same ways. They believed in a lot of the same things fundamentally. And I think most good organizations have a lot of have a lot of things in common, and I'm sure I'll find the Jaguars have a lot in common with the good organizations I've been around.
Now, as you look at this, the websites in the league have changed dramatically since Vic first started here and you started up there in Indianapolis. And Vic came up with the Ask Vic column, and obviously that created a lot of following. Have you got some ideas? Have you got some things that you want to do? Or are you going to come in with a lot of creative license?
Yeah, I mean, one appealing thing is, you know, and it's a different, it's a much different philosophical structure that the Colts have to their website that the Jaguars did. When I was with the Colts, it was very much, you know, the marching orders were the website very much belonged to the team, and I wrote stories that purely reflected the voice of the team. That won't change much in Jacksonville. You know, when you're the Jaguars.com writer, you're the voice of the team, and you're trying to get their message out to a degree. But in speaking with Wayne Weaver yesterday when I was down there sort of ironing the final things out, if you will, one of the things that he was very upfront with me about is he believes that the Jaguars.com writer needs to have credibility and they need to be able to tell like it is. So that's certainly something you're going to find is that, you know, I'm going to talk to Gene Smith, I'm going to talk to Jack Del Rio, you know, talk to Wayne Weaver, the people involved. But I believe it'll be my job to, you know, tell the fans what's going on in the most truthful way I can, which is what I've always tried to do.
So, and it will be a nice change that you don't have Bill Polian breathing down your neck saying, John, you can't write that.
Well, you know, Bill never actually came to me specifically, I'll be honest with you, and said, hey, there are things you can't write. But the spirit of the Colts website was very much that the writer, I was very much a reporter and wrote things that were based on quotes, based on stat, and there was very little personality involved in what the Colts.com writer did. I never had a problem with that because I knew going in from talking to Bill Polian that was how it was going to be, and you do what the people who sign your checks, you do what they ask you to do. Wayne Weaver is clearly a believer that the website, that the Jaguars website, needs to be something that the fans can embrace and needs to be something that the fans feel comfortable with and enjoy going to. And it's clearly his belief that, the website writer needs to be a guy there that the fans can relate to and that he can have a conversation with the fans about football.
With all due respect, I believe that Vic created that mentality, that philosophy. I think as many people would go to the Times Union website would come to Jaguars.com for their information to get it from Vic.
Sure.
That's a tribute to what he was able to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly beyond all of our joking about Vic, and I'm looking forward to getting there and talking to you guys so we can cut on Vic behind his back, because I think that's what he'd expect.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did a wonderful job of creating that site and creating that as a place where fans could go to learn about football, they go to talk about football, and you could have a conversation about the NFL. And, you know, if there's a legacy that I want to carry on of Vic's, and there's quite a few of them, but that's certainly the one that I would like to see Jaguars.com continue to be that, because I think that's really where its strength lies.
Well, and you got to give credit to Wayne Weaver for taking that approach, because there are a lot of owners in the National Football League that want company line.
Well, I've lived it firsthand. I mean, Wayne hired me in 1994, and he said the exact same thing back then. He said
right.
that people won't listen if you don't call it like it is. There's a
and
lot
that's
of different.
A hard thing to realize for an owner. I mean, and Jeff made a good point. You have to give Wayne a lot of credit because, you know, it's not the norm across the league. I'll put it that way. And you know, that's not the approach the Colts wanted to take. And as I said, I never had a problem with that when I was here because that's what it was, and that's what you were told. But it is a different philosophy, and it's a very fan-friendly philosophy because fans see through it. They know when you're telling the truth, when they're not. Fans are not dumb. So I'm hoping to learn as much from the fans as, you know, they can learn from me over time. And, that's obviously a huge, huge reason for Jaguars.com's success is Wayne's approach to it.
Hey, John, we're out of time. We've got to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. We're excited that you're back, and hopefully you'll stick your head in here next week and visit with us on the air.
Yeah, get you on the air a little bit, John.
I'm looking forward to working with you guys. I can't wait. Jeff, right. Brian, thanks for having me on.
Hey, best to Sherry and Jake, and we're excited you guys are coming home.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
All right, that's John Osher, the new senior editor of Jaguars.com. Folks, he has Jeff Lagerman's endorsement. I'm telling you.
One of the best.
Yeah, you are going to really appreciate who John is and the way that he does things. Episcopal High Zone.
I can tell you this.
John Osher.
When I found out, the day that I found out that Vic was leaving,
yep,
I went into our boss's office, and I said, have you called John Osher yet?
And he smiled.
That was my first comment after finding out, after shedding lots of tears.
John Osher will be here next week, folks, writing on Jaguars.com. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after news here at the bottom of the hour on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Well, folks, don't forget, Friday night, Revive the Pride. Team Teal right here, 6 o'clock South End Zone, Bud Zone, special concession prices. You're going to want to be there for that. But Wayne will be there. Jack Del Rio will be there. Bocelli will be there. Carl Cannon will be there. It's the Team Teal Touchdown Jacksonville Kickoff Rally. That'll have special prizes, including a chance to win 2011 season tickets. Plus, they'll be upgrading some folks to the Touchdown Club here at Everbank Field. That's Friday night, 6 o'clock. Be there. Jaguars this week, rolling right along here. Just talked to John Osher, the new senior editor. And really, we are excited about having him on board.
Real good guy. Like I said, one of the best writers I've read. And he will do a great job at Jaguars.com.
And he ties back to the beginnings of this franchise.
I mean, he's Jacksonville. You know, exactly. He's a Jacksonville guy.
Across the river right there by the Hart Bridge at Episcopal High. Also, as we go forward with this show, we will tie in the social media. So we are on the Jaguars Facebook page, which is facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Okay. And then Twitter is @JagsVoice. We'll just stay with that because this is the radio show. And if you want to be involved in the show, we've got the computers up. We've got this stuff. Joe is helping monitor it.
Phone is still working, too.
Yeah, we're still an old-time radio show here on News Talk Radio W. Yeah, leave it to Jeff to bring us back old
355-6351.
355-NFL wants lots of different ways for you to be a part of this show. We have not announced who will sit in that seat. We know one person who will be around a lot coming in the near future, and we've got other ideas as well. But look, make it your virtual seat and be right here with us and interact on a consistent basis. Again, Jacksonville Jaguars, well, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars, @JagsVoice for Twitter. Okay, piece of news that just came across our desk in the last hour, and that is the Jaguars just lost their quarterback's coach, Todd Monken. He's returning to the college ranks where he's going to be the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. That is, he was the receivers coach. He became the quarterback's coach.
And now he's gone. You know, and boy, you know, Todd came from the college ranks.
He was with Les Miles at LSU and at Oklahoma State.
And if I remember correctly, he was one of those coaches that did try to interview with another team and was denied. There's been some talk about, you know, how's that affecting the Jaguars coaching staff. You know, going back to the college, I think you're going to see more of that, certainly this year, and it may continue to happen with NFL teams because for two reasons. Number one, you've got a potential lockout looming, number one. And number two, the college pension system is pretty good where certain NFL teams for coaches don't have a pension.
Right, and this is one of them.
And, you know, coaches have to make decisions that are going to, you know, be to the best interests of themselves and their families, and I understand that. That's part of the business.
How difficult?
But boy, what's going
to
happen?
How difficult
now
is it to replace a coach when you say to someone that's coming in, we're really working on a one-year deal because the owner said if we don't make the playoffs.
That, and that's tough.
And you'll be on a one-year deal because that's all these guys have.
That's tough, you know. And you know, a lot of people criticized Wayne Weaver for saying, well, you know, why'd you keep the coach? Well, I really believe that, for one, I think that Jack can do a better job. In other words, take this team further than he has in the last couple years, for one. Number two is I think if you did make a wholesale change, it would have been very difficult for this team to go out and hire a new coach and hire new coaches with a lockout looming.
Yep.
You know, how many years are you going to be willing to pay them when you may have a strike? To me, that was a smart business decision. And a lot of people didn't agree with it at first. But if you kind of sit back and you think about it and you see what's going on now and the lockout is approaching sooner than it is later, then it starts to make good sense.
Here's the thing. That's obviously a key position. Quarterback coach. You got to work with Cutter, and you got to work with David Garrard, and hey, they're going to draft a quarterback this year. The future of the franchise, in all likelihood. So that position is a significant start for a young quarterback.
Well, and it's going to have to be somebody that, you know, obviously you'd like to be able to get somebody who is experienced, who is respected, and it's going to be difficult because of the labor situation. I would not want to be the owner of the Tennessee Titans right now. I like the hire of Mike Munchak. But for him to be able to assemble a staff this year, which is very unique with potential lockout,
right,
would be extremely difficult.
I was kind of surprised they let him blow Heimerdinger out of there.
Well, and that may be a guy you look at. You know, Mike Heimerdinger is an outstanding coach, a very well-respected coach. He's got familiarity within the division.
He took Steve McNair.
He's got a contract. He's going to get paid somewhere else. He might not cost you a lot of money here. That may be a guy that head coach Jack Del Rio looks at because he knows the personnel of the Tennessee Titans. He's familiar with the division. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're talking about a guy if he's healthy, and that's clearly an issue.
Yeah, cancer,
and wants to
cancer
coach.
Issues.
Yeah, and wants to coach. You know what he did with Steve McNair. I mean, when he came in there, McNair's numbers went up. Mm-hmm. McNair became a much more efficient quarterback.
And he brought, what, Kerry Collins back from the dead.
Yeah.
I mean, Kerry Collins?
Yeah.
I mean, he had a phenomenal year.
Yeah.
Let him, what, 15-1?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So that good call. That's a guy you got to look at. But when you lose a guy like Monken, I don't know, are you scrambling in February to find somebody? Or does the lockout help you because you know,
you got time.
Yeah.
You got time, and you know what? In a pinch, why can't Dirk Cutter coach quarterbacks?
Yeah, I bet he could.
You're darn right. I mean, Dirk Cutter can coach quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, there was a day when a coaching staff was 8 guys. I mean,
and that was it.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time, coordinators handled a position.
And people heard Vic say over and over, Chuck Knoll was the head coach and the special teams coach.
Yeah, I mean, look around the league. Look at the Green Bay Packers. Who do you think Mike McCarthy's coaching?
Yeah.
He's coaching Aaron Rodgers. And he's the head coach, offensive coordinator, and really, if you're the offensive coordinator, you're the quarterback's coach.
Yeah, you're dealing with him anyway.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that you're really interacting with anyway.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's one we'll follow, folks. 355-NFL-1. Grab a phone call here. John's in Green Cove Springs. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. That was one of the names I was going to say, but the other one was is there might be somebody retiring that's kind of a home boy. That what about Mark Brunell?
I mean, it's certainly a possibility.
But to leave playing, and go right into coaching, that rarely happens.
Yeah, usually, John, I mean, I understand that, hey, he's got a tremendous amount of experience having played in the league, and that certainly would benefit it. And essentially, he has been a quarterback's coach over the last couple of years. I mean, he obviously worked with Drew Brees. He has been mentoring Mark Sanchez for the New York Jets. Wouldn't be a bad decision.
But is a guy like Mark, who's clearly a family guy, going to want to jump right out of football into the coaching
ground? He may need the job.
It's true. He did have some financial difficulty last year.
You never know.
Of course, as little as he played, he could probably go back and be a $2 million a year backup quarterback in New York, and that's more than a quarterback's coach is going
to
make.
Yeah, John, if Mark is going to decide whether to try to play again or to coach, coaches don't make as much money as NFL minimum guys make.
And NFL players work hard, but they don't grind like coaches until midnight.
No.
Different deal altogether. John, we appreciate the call. We take a break. Some things starting to light up a little bit on the Twitter and Facebook thing. We're going to go heavy with that here on this show moving forward, folks. This is Jaguars This Week, brought to you by Aetna, and only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. All right, rolling right along here. Sexton, Loggeman, Fortunato, Jaguars This Week.
Man, that sounds weird.
I like it.
Just
Sexton, Loggeman, Fortunato. And eventually...
Missing a name in there.
Well, we'll add another name. We know who it is, but...
Screw Vic.
See, it's time to move on, folks. No tears here. Just a bunch of carnivores chewing on the bones. So, 355-NFL-1 if you want to jump in. Joe, we have a post on Facebook.
We do have Facebook. By the way, you want to join us on Facebook? It's facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Doug Henning did just that. By the way, he appreciates the conversation you had with John Osher. And, of course, he says he remembers John when he was here at the beginning, liked his writing. His question is, you have any indication whether some of the players will work out on their own if there's a lockout, and what would the players do if it happened?
The players for years worked out on their own anyway. I mean, even back, late 80s, early 90s, there was no OTAs. The OTAs didn't really start until Jimmy Johnson was running an offseason that consisted of 30-plus OTAs. And really revolutionized, I think, the league to the point where eventually they had to start monitoring that because certain coaches were getting carried away. Absolutely, players will work out on their own. In today's day and age, I mean, you've got, Fred Taylor who goes to South Florida and they train for months at a time with other NFL players. NFL players will find a way to stay in shape. Their body is their livelihood. Their body is their source of income. They're not going to just go back home,
right. Eat
mom's cooking, and...
Well, there's a couple guys
that might do that. And
pot roast.
Yeah, not too easy turns. But for the most part, all guys will take care of their bodies. Now, there's debate as to can you take care of your body the way that you could with not having a structured workout program. Some guys, yes. Some guys can do better, and some guys will do worse.
Well, I got to think that some of the players will get together and work out together. Maybe the offensive line will work out together, or those who are in town in the same place.
It's just a shame because I feel for some guys that, for example, back in 1995, a lot of the guys, on the team that we had, really bought into this community. We moved here.
Right.
We became a part of the fabric of the community.
Right.
And, not to slight, all the different gyms in our community, but probably the best gym in this whole city is the one that lies right down the hall. Some of the best trainers, whether they be weightlifting coaches or athletic strength and conditioning coaches and rehabilitation specialist Mike Ryan and his crew. That's the only thing that I think will hurt it the most is that you lose a lot of that structured environment. To have all of those people right here in one place.
There are, and I know you know them, there are a couple of high-end training centers that have opened up around here. And
sure.
I imagine you're going to see, like the HIT Center down there on Phillips Highway, you're going to see some of those players who already work out there kind of migrate there. But, I saw a special on NFL Network about Donovan McNabb a couple years ago and how he goes to Phoenix every offseason, and not only his receivers join
him. He didn't go
to
Phoenix when he was throwing up in the Super Bowl, did he?
Maybe not.
Yeah, whatever.
But a lot of the Eagles receivers and Cardinals receivers would go there and work out with him. I'm going to guess that you're going to maybe even see the Players Association, wouldn't you think? I mean, you were on their executive board. Maybe create some regional opportunities for guys to go to Atlanta or Houston and work out.
Well, maybe. Maybe, but you got to remember one thing. To do that costs money.
That's true. But that's what they pay dues for, though, right? Guys could pay their own way.
Yeah, but you think the training center is going to end up
not for
saying,
free.
Hey, come on in for free.
No.
Oh, no.
No, those guys have to go pay.
A lot of these guys are going to have to take the initiative. They're going to have to come out of pocket and pay some trainer.
Well, they're going to be out of pocket for their
medical. Or pay for a facility.
They're going to be out of pocket for the health insurance.
Yeah, it's not going to be good.
They're going to be Cobra.
Didn't Fred used to do his own thing down in Miami?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I went down
with other guys.
It was a Drew Rosenhaus.
5 minutes ago, in case you weren't listening.
You did? I'm sorry.
Maybe 10 minutes ago.
I had it on some other
show. Since you pointed out.
While you were over there Facebook, and I was talking about Fred.
I went down when I was at 47, and I did a story on Fred. And I walked in that morning, and Terrell Owens was there. Chad mm-hmm. Ochocinco was there. Marcus Stroud was there.
Maurice had spent time. Maurice Jones-Drew spent time down there.
Exactly. So you're going to have some of that. Guys will go places and work out with others. And some guys, they live in other places.
I just hope that all of this talk is for naught. And that by March 4th, there's some kind of resolution to this issue that exists between the players and the owners.
Midnight.
It's too good of a game. It's been too lucrative in one of the worst economic downturns in modern history.
And now you're going to talk about
it. And to generate $9 billion or close to $9 billion in revenue to lose that momentum that this game has clearly gained over the last number of years and has clearly taken it away from all the other professional sports.
Just from the player's perspective, we don't have enough time to really dive in, but just from the player's perspective, if D. Smith has them on the road, because he's the guy who said we're going to war, obviously they brought him in.
Which was a terrible thing to say. But you can't draw that comparison at all.
Can the players, if they wanted to, can they steer it back on? D. Smith looks to be a guy, he was brought in to do this. He is a labor lawyer. He was brought in to get a deal, but he was also brought in to get a good deal. If they get close, can the players push it? Or are they riding D. Smith? You worked with Gene Upshaw. Was Gene in charge?
Well, I think clearly there is a 10-member executive committee that will wield a lot of influence in that union. But the question that I have is, where's the ownership at? You have Roger Goodell, who is pretty much that main voice. He's talking about rollbacks. He's talking about 18 games. There's a lot of conversations, a lot of things that have to be resolved on both sides of the fence. And, I've got some concerns about, them wanting to go to 18 games. But, you look at what the Green Bay Packers had went through this year, and it was amazing that they were able to do what they did considering the number of players that they had on IR. If you go to 18 games, does the NFL become a matter of who's the healthiest at the end of the year instead of who's the best football team? Is it a battle of attrition? And yesterday Wayne Weaver had his press conference. He said clearly the fans are in favor of an 18-game schedule. And I disagree with that just at its face value, and that I do agree with Wayne in that fans don't want to pay for 4 preseason games at full ticket prices.
Yeah, but that's very different than 18 regular season games.
Absolutely. But that's different. They want to see games. They want to see 16 games. They don't want to see 4 preseason games and have to pay for them. There was a survey of fans, and I think only 25% said that having 18 games was that big of a deal. But that may end up being what kind of is the tilting point. Because with the extra 2 games, you're going to get extra television money that may help keep that player's money close to where it's at now or at the level that it's at now, and that the excess can be kept by the owners going forward for the investment in the game, stadiums, et cetera.
And the flip side is that there'll be fewer OTAs, there will be fewer...
There clearly has to be changes in all of that if you're going to go to an 18-game schedule.
We've got a couple of weeks, 22 days until the 3rd of March at midnight, where the current labor agreement ends. And we step into unknown territory.
Hey, and congratulations to the Green Bay Packers, Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy.
We can talk about that.
They really did a tremendous job all year, and what they were able to overcome and still win that game was simply magnificent. One of the most entertaining NFL postseasons that I can remember.
We'll leave it on those words. Night, everybody. See you next week.